Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for February 16th, 2010. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. Today I'm speaking with George Hadjishenghalis, corresponding author on a research article published in the current issue of Science Signaling about how the pathogen Porphyromonas gingivalis evades the immune system to cause infection. Dr. Hadjishenghalis spoke to me from his office at the University of Louisville School of Dentistry. Welcome, Dr. Hadjishenghalis.
Thanks for calling me.
In the paper that you've just published in Science Signaling, you focus on infection by Porphyromonas gingivalis. Before we talk about that organism specifically, how does the immune system become activated to fight an infection?
Well, invading microbes are detected by specialized bug sensors or receptors of the so-called innate immunity. And this is the type of immunity we are born with and becomes activated very rapidly after encountering a pathogen. However, innate immunity is relatively non-specific, and usually one needs the other arm of immunity, the adaptive immunity, to clear an infection. Now, adaptive immunity takes several days to kick in, but it's highly specific for the type of invading pathogen. But let me stress here, however, that innate immunity is not simply a way to buy time before adaptive immunity gets going. And this is because innate immunity is a really ancient defense system with a long coevolution with microbes, in contrast to adaptive immunity and its sensors or receptors, which have no clue whatsoever on the biological context of the encountered antigen. For this reason, the adaptive receptors would not know whether to respond or not to an antigen they meet. And this necessary information is provided by innate immunity, which in this way can instruct the adaptive immune response. No wonder, therefore, that successful pathogens, which undermine host defenses, target preferentially innate immunity.
So it's the innate immune system that first responds to a pathogen, and then the adaptive immune response to that pathogen will kick in.
Yes, but it's important for the pathogen, if they want to evade the host response altogether, to start working against the innate immunity.
How do most pathogens then evade the innate immune system?
If a pathogen aspires to make it and persist in the mammalian host, they have to sabotage at least one of three stages of immunity. One is detection. That is to prevent their recognition by the sensing receptors. Second is to impair activation of the immune response. For example, by attacking signaling molecules that transmit information for infection in order to mobilize antimicrobial responses. And the third way is to interfere directly with the antimicrobial response itself. For example, to destroy or resist the action of host defense molecules.
The strategy is either to avoid being recognized, to avoid the signal that's generated upon being recognized, or to avoid the consequences of being recognized.
Exactly. So either of these three, or all three together, or two of the three would work. The more you do, the better it is.
Right.
But you don't have to do all three in order to persist in the host.
And in this paper, you're looking specifically at the role of complement receptors in the immune response. Could you explain what the complement cascade is in terms of the innate immune response?
Yes. Traditionally, complement was perceived as simply an antimicrobial enzyme system found in serum. But now we know better. For example, we know that now that complement crosstalks with other defense systems and actually has an impact of both innate and adaptive immunity. The complement system can be triggered by antigen-antibody complexes or microbial products, and the ensuing complement cascade involves sequential activation and proteolytic cleavage of a series of serum proteins. This will lead to the introduction of active fragments that carry out several coordinated functions, which aim, of course, to clear pathogens. And probably the most well-known is the C3 and the C5a anaphylatoxins, which stimulate the recruitment and activation of phagocytic cells. And these are cells that literally eat bacteria. That's why they are called phagocytic. Other generated complement fragments, known as opsonins, promote the phagocytosis of bacteria. And still other activated fragments form a complex, a protein complex, that targets and directly destroys pathogens.
Are the complement proteins made by the cells of the innate immune system?
They are made by cells of the innate immune system, like macrophages in response to pathogens, but they are also produced by the liver, and they are made available in the circulation. So any time we have constitutive presence of these serum proteins in the serum, but they are not activated. They are in their inactive form. You have to activate the cascade in order for these proteins to generate active fragments to carry out effector functions.
Complement proteins are around all the time, and the cascade gets activated when a pathogen is detected by the innate immune system.
I mean, as we speak, our blood contains these proteins, but hopefully they are not activated because we are not invaded by pathogens. Complement is triggered every time we see a pathogen. And actually, there are many molecules like lipopolysaccharide, CpG DNA, zymosin. These microbial products activate both complement and toll-like receptors at the same time. Some bacteria, however, they inhibit the complement cascade, and this is part of their defense, their evasion strategy. But the normal way to respond is to have the complement cascade activated when we have an invading pathogen.
In this current study that your group has just published, you focus on the pathogen Porphyromonas gingivalis.
Yes, Porphyromonas gingivalis.
The name of this organism implies that it has some association with gum disease, with gingivitis. Is this the bacterium that causes gingivitis?
Yes, Porphyromonas gingivalis, or simply P. gingivalis, as the name implies, causes inflammation of the gingiva or gums. In its severe form, this disease is known as periodontitis, and its hallmark is inflammatory destruction of the bone that supports the teeth. This, of course, can lead to tooth loss. Moreover, P. gingivalis has been implicated in systemic inflammatory diseases. For example, this bacterium has been found alive in atherosclerotic plaque lesions and in lung abscesses. Let me say here that periodontitis is epidemiologically associated with atherosclerosis and oral aspiration pneumonia. And in addition to that, there is recent evidence which suggests that P. gingivalis infection may prime the autoimmune response in rheumatoid arthritis.
Since all of the diseases or the disorders that P. gingivalis is, with which it's associated, are inflammatory in nature, it's the immune response that's causing the damage, not the bacterium.
Absolutely. That's very correct, yes. And there is another kind of paradox, because P. gingivalis is very specific when it tries to do immune evasion. It does not induce a wholesale immunosuppression. It's very specific. It wants to block only those pathways that are going to eliminate it. It wants to keep open all other inflammatory pathways. And the reason is not because it's mean and it wants to do us harm, although this is what happens. It's because it thrives on inflammation. So this is an acarolytic bacterium. It needs peptides and hemin, which is a substance from the blood, which means that it needs the inflammatory fluid to get hemin, because hemin is essential growth. If there is no inflammation, it's going to die.
Right. It needs food.
Yes, exactly. So it is not in its best interest to stop inflammation altogether.
You focused on P. gingivalis because it does something that seems to be counterintuitive for an invading pathogen that wants to evade the immune system. So what is it that P. gingivalis does that seems to be counterintuitive to ensuring its own survival?
P. gingivalis does indeed an unusual thing. This bacterium proactively generates the complement fragment C5A using an enzyme that mimics the action of the host enzyme that generates C5A. That does not make much sense, especially since this pathogen goes at great lengths to block the physiological complement cascade.
While on the one hand it shuts down the complement cascade, it
yes.
then produces one of the molecules that's important for the complement
yes.
cascade, but just this one molecule.
Yes, this is exactly what it does. For example, when it cleaves the C5 to generate C5A, very transiently, it also generates the C5B, but it goes ahead and completely destroys this C5B, because if it leaves it intact, this would start a smaller cascade, the terminal pathway that will form the main brain attack complex. So it kills this pathway. It leaves only C5A intact.
To stimulate the C5 receptor.
Yes. Why then does P. gingivalis specifically generate C5A, which, by the way, is the most potent complement fragment? It is like generating weapons for your enemy. And this is what actually intrigued us to undertake this study. And we found that P. gingivalis has a hidden agenda. Let me explain that. When pigeon gevalis activates the C5a receptor together with another inflammatory receptor, the toll-like receptor 2, the net effect, strikingly, does not promote pigeon gevalis killing by phagocytic cells. This trick, however, would not work if the C5a receptor or the toll-like receptor 2 were to be activated alone. And there's more to it. This crosstalk between the C5a receptor and the toll-like receptor that is instigated by pigeon gevalis blocks specific functions that could eliminate this pathogen. It does not block all inflammatory responses, which are actually reinforced by this crosstalk. Does pigeon gevalis like this? You bet it does. Because this pathogen needs inflammation to survive, the inflammatory fluid brings nutrients like hemin, which are essential for pigeon gevalis growth. And as if this was not bad enough for us, the host that is, inflammation contributes to the destruction of the tissues that support the teeth.
Pigeon gevalis makes this protein that activates the complement receptor, which participates in crosstalk with the toll-like receptor 2, or TLR2. Do these two pathways normally crosstalk in the immune system, or is this crosstalk only initiated in response to infection by pigeon gevalis?
Yes, the concept of complement TLR crosstalk or toll-like receptor crosstalk is a really new concept. There have been only a few papers, actually very recent ones. And yes, there is crosstalk between not only C5A receptor, but also the C3A receptor with several TLRs and mostly with TLR4. And this crosstalk actually involves either synergistic interactions or antagonistic interactions. And the purpose behind, these are physiological crosstalks, okay? And the purpose behind this crosstalk is to coordinate the innate response to infections. So it will reinforce responses that are needed to fight pathogens, but there are also antagonistic interactions to put a brake on the immune response, not to get out of control.
How does promoting that crosstalk benefit the pathogen?
When pigeon gevalis instigates this crosstalk, and by the way, it can directly activate both receptors because it can engage the TLR2 directly with its surface molecules, and it can generate at will C5A to activate C5A receptor. It does not rely on immunological means to get C5A. It can do it itself at will. And so what happens, and this is what is striking about it, although each receptor is inflammatory on its own, it both induce inflammatory signaling. When you have co-activation of these two receptors that are brought together by pigeon gevalis, the net effect is strikingly immunosuppressive, at least for one specific function, that is the production of an antimicrobial enzyme called iNOS that produces a toxic substance, a nitric oxide, to which pigeon gevalis is exquisitely sensitive. And pigeon gevalis kills this pathway by this crosstalk.
Clearly, this is interesting from the point of view of the strategy of the pathogen, you know, how the pathogen evades the immune system. But from studying the way that pigeon gevalis evades the immune system, does this teach you anything about signaling in the immune system?
Yes. This is not just about pigeon gevalis and periodontitis. We also learned something new about the innate immune system. So when signaling pathways collide, you may have emergent properties. Indeed, the specific pathway that is triggered by the crosstalk between the C5A receptor and the toll-like receptor 2 and culminates in diminished production of an antimicrobial molecule that would kill pigeon gevalis, this pathway could not be predicted by considering the standard pathways activated by the C5A receptor or the toll-like receptor 2 alone. These findings also tell us that successful pathogens may not have simply learned to attack the complement or the toll-like receptor system separately, but to also instigate disarming crosstalk between the two systems. And this is what is novel about this study.
So essentially, you were able to use this pathogen strategy for evading the immune system to uncover a property of the innate immune system that wasn't readily apparent before.
Exactly.
In addition to just learning something knew about how the immune system functions, then getting back to pigeon gevalis, did you learn anything from the study that might help in treating or preventing infection by pigeon gevalis?
Yes, that study was very helpful in this regard because If we block C5a receptor, and there are many ways for doing this, we have excellent small molecule inhibitors, then two good things will happen. One is that we will deprive pinching duvalisone of an evasion strategy. In other words, by blocking the C5a receptor, then the killing of pinching duvalis will be greatly facilitated. And then second, by blocking the C5a receptor, we're going to inhibit inflammatory responses, unwarranted inflammatory responses that were not doing anything productive against the bacteria, but actually contribute to the destruction of periodontal tissues. So it's like killing two birds with one stone.
Thank you, Dr. Haji Shingalis.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure talking with you.
That was George Haji Shingalis, corresponding author on a research article published in the February 16th issue of Science Signaling. That article is titled, Microbial Hijacking of Complement Toll-like Receptor Crosstalk. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. On behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.